is September 16th, 2015. That would make us the third day of Tishrei. Tough Shin Ayin Vav. Wow, believe it or not. And I'm right, right? I got
I'm just trying to, I'm not awake yet.
Yeah, we're good. Okay. And some Gedalia as well. Okay, so no breakfast. Len is a free man today. Oh,
I still got white Lashon Hara.
What? Well, yeah, sorry, some Gedalia about why it's important to listen to Lashon Hara. Yes,
right.
That is the theme of some Gedalia.
Right.
All right, so we're going to focus on Chumash. We're going to go to Perek Gimel Pasuk Zayin, and figure out what in the world's going on here. All right, so this is right after Adam gets to Adam and Chava both bite from the apple, or not the apple, the fruit. Right. So what is the result? Vatipachna ene shnehem. Both of their eyes open up. Vayedu keirum heim. They knew that they were naked. Vayispru alei teina. They tied a fig leaf tree around them. Vayasu lahem chagaros. And they were made, and they made aprons. Okay, so the clear thing is, maybe what's very interesting to note here, and what we need to figure out, and it's difficult to figure out, is what does it mean that their eyes opened up? What does that mean? What do they see now that they didn't see before? So if you take a look at Rashi, those are the Mikros Gedolos, even if you don't have the Mikros Gedolos, you have one over there if you like. You can take a look at Rashi. And it says, Vatipach, they opened up. So what does it mean they opened up? So it says Rashi, L'inyan HaChachma. Right, with regards to wisdom, davar hakasav v'lul inyan riyam mamish v'suf hamikra muchia. It's not about actually seeing; they were able to see before, right? It's just that now they were open up to more knowledge. So, what does it mean?
What page is this? Right,
we are on ayin ches. I assume you have the same setup as I do.
Okay, so I'm here.
Ayin ches. Okay. So Rashi, perek gimel pasuk zayin. Right, so their eyes open up with regards to Chachma. So now we're going to leave where Len is, because Len is only looking in an article Chumash, and we're going to look in the Sifsei Chachamim, which is the super commentary on Rashi, and he comments Kolomer l'inyan Chachma shel Yedia, right, about knowing Shnodel ham Achshav Masha Avdu, right, they knew now what they lost.
Thank you so much.
What does that mean? Ratzalomer he mitzvah umi eitz hadas venirali. So what does he mean? Venerally, dilian hachachma shel das tovera hakasav adaver. It's talking about the wisdom of good and bad. The choshukasav v'ravle alvafal pishin nisna bo dealikros shemos. Even though he was given the wisdom to call name all of the animals, lo nisin bo yitzahara ad achlam min eitz. He wasn't given the yitzahara until he ate from the tree. V'yodeya ma bein tovera, and would be able to distinguish between good and bad. So what do we think of that? Right, then now that he ate from the tree, his eyes were open up. What does that mean? It says the Sifsei Chachamim. Oh, well, it means that beforehand he didn't have the Yetzirah. Now he does have the Yetzirah, and he can distinguish between good and bad.
Sounds very paradoxical. In one way, it seems paradoxical. We always say that sort of blinds us to reality. It's the common belief. So
okay.
How can the opposite?
Okay.
Seems not quite, but implies that.
Very good. It sounds like it's a paradox. Right? On one hand, he's saying he knows more, right? He sounds like he knows more. On the other hand, right, the reality is what he's being blinded from.
Right.
And that's what you want to claim. So that is okay. So we'll leave this. We'll try to understand this a little bit later. Any other thoughts before we about what this Rashi is talking? Rashi / Sifsei Chachamim are saying here. Right, it's talking about Tovra. He was given that knowledge, right? And
the implication is that knowledge is bad. I mean, he's given the knowledge of good and evil, but that's extra knowledge that is bad.
See. He gave out the copies.
To me, you could use the word knowledge as an ambiguous word. Psychologically, I'm not. Because knowledge means I can discriminate, that type of knowledge. Knowledge is I know I'm part of it. So I'm blind to this, never affected me. Now I see it, I am affected by it. So
okay.
It's a different use of the word knowledge, I think.
Okay, good. Good. Okay, so we're good. We're thinking about this. We're thinking about what this Rashi means. Rashi seems to somewhat be echoed. Those are, again, looking in the Mikras Gedolos. You can take a look at the Or HaChaim. So the Or HaChaim is on the, well, it's on the right and left side of the page, but the one we're looking at is on the left side of the page, where it says the Zion, right? So the further leftmost column on the page, there's a Zion there.
Oh,
it says, Vatipachta Enei, right? That his eyes were opened up. Right, so what does it mean? That which we explained in the verse that they were naked, meaning I explained this already 10 psukim ago or so. Sha'avon yolid hargashas ha'erva asher mitzida yolid boshes ha'arum. That the sin, right, birthed or brought about a desire for erva. Erva is immoral activity. I mean, now they had a desire for immoral activity. Asher mitzida yolid boshes ha'arum. And that is why they realized they were naked. Meaning the naked, the recognition of their nakedness is due to the shame about their desire for immoral behavior. So therefore, everybody is embarrassed, right? That is the source for covering one's nakedness, right? Because one is embarrassed about what that represents and what those desires might be about, right? So that is why they want to cover it up, right? So again, so the Or HaChaim seems to be echoing the idea of Rashi, right? That it's an idea of they now recognize something about the world that they never had recognized before. Good so far?
Okay.
you sound dubious.
I mean, just keep going.
Okay, we'll keep going. Okay,
no,
so now let's...
Don't be distracted.
Okay, so take a look at the Sforno. Sforno is on the right side of the page, right? You see those that are using the right. The Mikras Gedolos says Rashi, Musaf Rashi, Evan Ezra, Sforno, right? So the Sforno says as follows: Vatipachta inei shnehem, right? So he gives a slightly different understanding. Nasnu lev el kol erev v'tanug afal pishi yazik. He now gave heart to all erev and tanug, to all enjoyments, even though it could be damaging. Yeah. Kol Orev V'tanug. I had it before.
What does it go together? Tanug is pleasure. It is an internal.
Yeah. It's a synonym of tanug. I'm not. Yeah. Afal pishiyazik. Even though it caused damage. Kishimas lev v'hashkacha v'davar tikra p'kichas avon ka'amru afal p'pikachas inacha. Right, that he gave his heart and understanding in something, that's called Pekichas Ayin. Pekichas Ayin is not about opening the eyes and seeing something, it's now about understanding and caring about something.
Right, right.
Right? So the Sforno is actually different than the, I think, is different than Rashi and the...
I'm saying the word knowledge is many different.
Right. That he now had a greater understanding, not of the possibilities,
right,
but of the pleasure that can come from those possibilities.
Right.
I mean, as opposed to before, things were not enticing.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, this Sforno says, now they would be enticing.
Right, right.
Now this Sforno works well with the sheet and the Rambam that was just given out to you. The Rambam wrote a book, the Mor Nevuchim, The Guide to the Perplexed. It's available at Barnes & Noble for, I don't remember, there's a price here. Oh, there it is, $12.95, at least when I bought it. When I gave this to Rabbi Greenspan to make a copy of it for me, he kind of like looked at it like, what in the world are you copying for? You know, it wasn't cover open like this, it was just like this. He's like, what in the world is, you know, this English text? And I showed him it's the Mor Nevuchim, and I pointed out that, you know, the Rambam wrote it in Arabic. So if you're reading Hebrew, it's a translation. You don't have to feel bad about reading it in English, right? So you don't have to feel bad about reading it in English. So he gave out the page, and the Rambam...
This is it.
Yeah, that's it, right? So this is the Rambam Part 1, Chapter 2. Now, the first the beginning part of the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim is all about translations, words that we don't really understand what they mean, and because you don't understand what they mean, therefore you're mistaken, etc., etc. So the The Rambam, I'll tell you outside the first page, meaning you have of chapter 2, that this is chapter 2, the beginning, and then here's 3, and here's the pages you have, and then the back, and then there's only a few more pages beyond it. I just didn't want to make things too complicated. So I'll tell you what how the Rambam introduces his chapter. He says, years ago, a learned man asked me a question of great importance. And he asked me as follows. It would at first sight, said the objector, appear from Scripture that man was originally intended to be perfectly equal to the rest of animal creation, which is not endowed with intellect, reason, or power distinguishing between good and bad, but that Adam's disobedience to the command of God procured him the great perfection which is the peculiarity of man, the power of distinguishing between good and evil. I mean, this person is asking the Rambam, you see, what does it seem from it, right? What did it, if you just read the words in English, right? Chapter 1 is about the creation of the world, right? There's this Adam that was created. Chapter 2, we talk again about Adam that was created.
Right.
And he's told, oh, don't eat from this tree. And then they eat from this tree, right? All of a sudden, his eyes are open up. He can tell they're seeing good and bad. So if that's all you're going to read, says this person asking the Rambam the question, right? So the impression you get is that Adam did advance after eating the fruit.
Right?
That before he was, I don't know, didn't know things. And now he does know things. So it sounds like, I don't know, good. So what makes man unique in that he recognized the distinction between good and evil, so that's a benefit that Adam got from eating from the fruit. So how do you reconcile that whole thing?
In fact, there's like Kabbalistic, some of the they claim this Adam wanted to do this to honor God, not just to be an animal.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
So it fits into somebody. They said he really he desired, but you don't want to be tested.
Right. This is the equivalent of saying that a certain man was rebellious and wicked, wherefore his nature was changed for the better, and he was made to shine as a star in the heavens. Such was the purport and the subject of the question, though not in the exact words of the inquirer. Now mark our reply, which is as follows. And now you have the page in front of you. You appear to have studied the matter superficially. The Rambam doesn't mince words in that first little paragraph. I don't know why that is a distinct paragraph, but the Rambam writes to him saying, or I don't know if this person actually existed, right? But Rambam writes to this person, well, you seem to not really know what you're talking about, and that's unfortunate. But let's understand what is going on here. So after that first little paragraph, with reference to this gift, the Bible states, the man was created in the form and likeness of God. On account of this gift of intellect, man was addressed by God and received his commandments, as it is said, and the Lord God commanded Adam. For no commandments are given to the brute creation or to those who are devoid of understanding. Right? So Rambam says, well, right off the bat, Adam got commandments, right? He got a commandment about not eating from the fruit.
Right?
He got a commandment at Purvu also. Why that's not really mentioned here is another question. But he was commanded about this. Right? So you can't tell me that he didn't have intelligence if he's the only one of all the animals that were given a certain commandment. Right? Through the intellect, man distinguishes between the true and the false. Okay. Now he had intellect, and with that intellect, he could tell the difference between true and false. Now, Rambam is going to make a distinction between true and false and good and bad. True and false is different than good and bad. Right? This faculty Adam possessed perfectly and completely. The right and the wrong are terms employed in the science of apparent truths, not in that of necessary truths. It is not correct to say, in reference to the proposition, the heavens are spherical, it is good, or to declare the assertion that the earth is flat to be bad. Right? I say the world is round, you don't say good, you say you're right. Right? The world is flat, you don't say that's a bad thing to believe, we say that's the wrong thing to believe. Right? But we say only that is true and others, right? But we say only that one it is true and others that it is false. For instance, I'll leave that off. I'll tell you off tape later. Similarly, our language expressed the idea of true and false by the terms emet and sheker, right? Of the morally right and the morally wrong by tov and ra, right? What's right and what's correct, right? Factually correct is emet and sheker, and what is morally right and wrong is tov and ra, good and bad. Thus, it is the function of the intellect to discriminate between true and the false, a distinction which is applicable to all objects of intellectual perception. When Adam was yet in a state of innocence, this is the key point, and was guided solely by reflection and reason, on account of which it said, thou hast made him little lower than the angels, he was not at all able to follow or to understand the principles of apparent truths. The most manifest impropriety to appear in a state of nudity was nothing unbecoming according to this idea. He could not comprehend why it should be so, or why it should not be so. I mean, what would be wrong with that? Right? What's he saying? Right? In the world pre-eating the fruit, right, there was true and not true. And anything that was good was only good because it was true. Right? What's going on over there? Somebody's phone. Okay. All right. So anyways, so good and true matched up one another. Right? As opposed to, as he's going, after man's disobedience, however, when he began to give way to his desires, which had their source in his imagination, to the gratification of his bodily appetites, as it said, and the wife saw the tree was good and the food was delightful to the eyes, he was punished by the loss of part of that intellectual faculty which he had previously possessed.
Well, all I got is that before Eitzanas, he was operating purely on intellectual basis. Now, once he ate it, passions came in.
Right.
And that blind passion blinds it. Human nature would be always a
hypocrite. Very good. Very good, yes.
So now, passions must, and passions innately are stronger than the intellect generally.
Well, in the world of the Rambam, that's the job of the intellect. I mean, your job in this world is for your intellect to carry the day over the passion. Yeah.
I think in a modern time, I mean,
or hopefully to have your passions line up with your intellect.
Well, right, but I think we only can do that by having chavrusa. That's not chavrusa.
You work on that.
Yeah, that helps us.
Okay, let's continue a little bit. Okay, let's continue a bit. So he therefore transgressed a command with which he had been charged on the score of his reason. And having obtained the knowledge of the apparent truths, he was wholly absorbed in the study of what is proper and what is improper. Then he fully understood the magnitude of the loss he had sustained, what he had forfeited, and what situation he thereby placed. Hence we read, "And ye shall be like Elohim, knowing good and evil, and not knowing or discerning the true and the false." Right, meaning you've now, as opposed to things being a objective morality that clearly is going to line up with what he understands. Meaning Adam knew what is good and what is true is to, well, the things he's done so far is to name all the animals and to be with Chava and to I guess theoretically avoid the tree, right? Avoid the tree, right? All of that is true and it is good.
Right.
What changed now? What changed now is that he now no longer was just focused on what is true, and rather what is good. Now, what is good? Is it good to keep the Torah? Well, yeah, that's what we try to believe. One could also make a case that it's good to to do what everyone wants in this world, to be free and act, free and merry. For tomorrow, you will die. Right? One could make a case that that's also good. There was an episode of House. That's like when we have, like, my wife and I have, like, a date night. That's our big thing, treat. You know, go watch an episode of House. So she likes House. I'm not as into it. But she's into House. So we watch House. And so one of the episodes of House was this rock star, this punk rocker guy, was brought in to be checked. Right? House is a doctor show, right? That it's always like this strange illness, and they have to figure out over the course of the show how to diagnose this person's illness, right? That's Dr. House is a world famous diagnostician, I guess, really? If that's the word. Yeah. So this guy is this, and they don't know what's wrong with him. They figure it's just because he's been drugged up and he for all his years, and that's the reason. But they say no, there must be a disease that we can treat. So one of the doctors, the student doctors that works for Dr. House, is so perturbed, is morally bothered by this person, that here she is schlepping away, working her tail off in medical school to one day, be a doctor and cure humanity and help the world and all that kind of stuff. And here's this guy who really couldn't care whether he lives or whether he dies,
right?
Because what do I care? I'll be high here, I'll be high there. He doesn't really care, one way or another, right? One can make a case. Right, that he's good. Right, he's doing good. I don't know. He's not bothering anyone else. He's just smoking, snorting coke all of his life. Right, but that's not true. Right, that's not true. So that is the image that has changed. That is the paradigm that changed after eating from the Eitz Hadas Tovara, right? That knowing good and bad, right? Well, now good and bad has a difficulty lining up with what is true and what is false,
right?
What a person could perceive as good could ultimately be false,
right?
So that is the Rambam's understanding here, and he continues on, along these ways, along that understanding, right? So that Rambam is really lining up with the Sforno. So that Rabbi Greenspan gave me a copy of the curriculum that we're supposed to be following. So these Makoros were on it, and it seemed from the curriculum that was matching up the Sforno and that was putting the Sforno and the Rambam against each other. I didn't read it that way. Right? I thought the Sforno was the same, and then lo and behold, in the footnotes of the Sforno, there is a translation of the Sforno, if anybody wants, by Dr. Pelkovitz, by Rabbi Pelkovitz, Dr. Pelkovitz's father is Rabbi Pelkovitz. He wrote a translation to the Sforno, and there are footnotes there, and the footnotes agreed with me that the Rambam and the Sforno line up with one another. Right? We can look at the Sforno again. In these 8 words that the Sforno says, he's pretty much saying these entire 2 pages in the Rambam. Right? The Sforno said, "Nasnu lev el kol arei v'tanug afal pishi yazik." Right? He gave his heart to all enjoyments, even though it causes damage. Right, even though he saw things as being good, even if they were false. Right, that is the Rambam's world. Right, false and true versus bad and good. Right, so they didn't necessarily they at one time were all aligned and now lost their alignment. Now, part of the question that was bothering the Rambam, which the truth is we skipped over, in that paragraph on top.
You realize the Rambam in this case is using almost strict Aristotle's dialogue.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
He's beyond Aristotle. I'm not saying he's crump.
Okay.
But he had to talk in their language. This was written to show that Yiddishkeit does not contradict reality, which was Aristotle.
Fine.
In that world at that time.
That's fine.
We live in that world. So it's
fine. I will accept it because I don't know how to argue back.
That's why.
Rambam's question was, how could it be? Meaning, you're telling me that this questioner was saying, well, you know, the Adam seems to have gotten better afterwards, right? Now his eyes were open, now, right? So he's asking the Rambam, how could it be that he's better now? And the Rambam said, well, there's no way he's better now. Rather, he's worse off now, and this is the way he's worse off, right? That it used to be that he had clear morality, and now it's not a clear morality anymore. So how does one, if you go back to Rashi, how does one understand Rashi? Right? Rashi seemed to be the questioner, right? Rashi seems to be on the side of the questioner, right? But Tipachna's eyes were open, l'inyan ha-chachma, with regards to wisdom, meaning now all of a sudden they got more wisdom, as the Sisi Chachamim explained, right? L'inyan ha-chachma shel das tov v'ra kasam v'daber, right? With the knowledge of good and bad is what the Pasuk is talking about. Now all of a sudden, right, things were good and bad. So it sounds like he has improved. Right? So how do we understand that? How would the Sifsi Chachamim defend himself against the attack of the Rambam? That can't be that Adam is better now than he was before.
Right?
Right? So it could be, we have about 3 minutes left, I don't know, I think we'll probably discuss this more, what's it, today's Wednesday, so Thursday, Friday, so I guess we'll discuss this a little more Friday morning. I'm teaching Gemara tomorrow also, right. Okay, so we're going to discuss this probably more on Friday, that probably what the Sisi Chachamim means is that what the Rambam was calling true and false versus good and bad, right, probably in Rashi's perception was all one thing. I mean, true and good was just there was no choice that Adam had. I mean, Adam's will and Chava's will, and we'll discuss this more on Friday, was totally aligned with the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? So now, when his eyes were opened up, right, there was a recognition of, well, good and bad, that it could be that I could have a will to do bad.
Right,
that was not perceptible. That was not perceived by Adam before. Not because he lacked the understanding of doing that. It's just that his desires were so in line with God's desires that there was no need to see a bad.
Right.
Now that his eyes are opened up, he was able to see that there was going to be a distinction between him and Imen HaKadosh Baruch. By the way, and the snakes.
His desires. We're totally aligned.
We're no longer totally aligned, and we'll discuss that more. By the way, which fits in with what the snake. What did the snake say when the snake said to Chava, "Oh, you know why God doesn't want you to eat that?" What did the snake argue?
Too much competition.
Too much competition. You're going to be Elohim. You're going to be like him. What do you mean like him? That you could devise your own morality. Right. You could devise your own desires. Right. So, all right. So we'll discuss this a little more tomorrow with Halacha Day. Don't know what that's going to be about yet. Have a easy and meaningful fast, and we'll continue on.
Meaningful first.